A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack complex stuff and really get to the core knowledge you can use.
That's the plan.
So today, we're hitting a really big one. It's maybe the biggest challenge in communication. Why is it that really important ideas, you know, the well-researched, true ones,
like a company strategy or maybe a public health message?
Exactly. Why do they so often just fall flat? People ignore them or they forget them, like, instantly.
It's a huge problem, right? The signal just gets lost in all the noise. And the answer, or at least a brilliant framework for an answer, comes from this landmark book, Made to Stick, Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die. It's by Chip and Dan Heath. And look, this isn't just about giving a better speech.
No,
it's about actually designing your message systematically so it cuts through, sticks in the memory, and importantly, makes people act.
Okay, so that's what we're doing today. We're going to deconstruct what makes an idea truly sticky.
Mm-hmm.
We want to figure out how you listening can stop just hoping your message lands.
Relying on luck or maybe thinking you need amazing charisma.
Right. And instead, use a real framework, a repeatable process to make your important messages actually, well, stick. Because stickiness, it turns out, isn't magic. It's about design.
It is. And the framework itself comes from this really interesting partnership, the Heath brothers. You've got Chip Heath.
Yeah.
He's a professor at Stanford Graduate School of Business. His background is deep in psychology, organizational behavior, basically the science of why we do what we do, academic rigor.
Got it. And then there's Dan Heath.
Right. Dan's more the consultant, the boots on the ground guy. He worked at Harvard Business School as a researcher, too. But his focus is really on practical application. How do you use these ideas?
Ah, so you have the theory and the practice coming together.
Precisely. That's why the book works so well, I think. Chip provides the why, the research on memory, decision making.
The deep stuff.
Yeah. And Dan translates it. He makes it simple, uses stories, makes it really actionable for, you know, anyone, managers, teachers, anyone trying to communicate.
So they didn't just say, hey, communication is broken.
No, they offered a solution, an evidence-based one, which is key. And that's why they've had other big successes, like their books Switch and Decisive.
Okay, so let's dive into the book itself, the core idea, the central premise.
It's pretty straightforward, actually. They argue that whether an idea succeeds or fails, it's mostly down to how it's designed. It's not luck.
Right.
And those sticky ideas, think urban legends, great ads, memorable lessons, they actually share common traits. Six key principles you can replicate.
Six principles. But before we get to the how-to, they identify the big villain, right? The thing that stops us.
Oh, yeah. The number one enemy of sticky communication. The curse of knowledge.
Just the name is brilliant. So what is it exactly? How does the curse of knowledge work?
It's basically this cognitive blind spot. When you know something really, really well.
Like an expert.
Exactly. You literally cannot imagine what it's like not to know it anymore. So you start talking in abstractions, using jargon, skipping steps.
Because it all seems obvious to you.
Right. But to your audience, the novice, it's like you're speaking a different language. They have no idea what you're talking about.
And they use that great experiment metaphor, the tappers and listeners.
Yeah, it's perfect. So one person, the tapper, taps out the rhythm of a really common song, like Happy Birthday.
Okay.
The tapper hears the full melody in their head while tapping. They think it's super obvious. They predict like 50% of listeners will guess the song.
In the reality.
The reality is the listeners just hear disconnected taps. It's noise.
Yeah.
Only about 2.5% actually guess the song correctly.
Wow. That's a huge gap.
Huge. And that's us when we communicate our expertise. We're the tappers hearing the music in our heads, totally overestimating how clear we're being.
Which explains why so many corporate mission statements sound like,
yeah,
well, nothing.
Or why complicated instructions get ignored. So the Heath brothers offer this systematic way to break the curse. An antidote.
And that's the 6ESS framework.
Exactly. S-U-C-C-E-S-S. It's a checklist, basically. Six principles to make your idea stickier.
All right, let's break it down. First letter. SS is for simple, finding the core.
Right. Now, simple here doesn't mean dumbed down or, you know, simplistic.
It's not about sound bites necessarily.
No, it's about ruthless prioritization, Finding the absolute core essence of your idea. They have this great line. If you say three things, you don't say anything.
Ouch, that's tough. I mean, leaving stuff out.
It does. You have to be a master of exclusion. Find that single most important idea.
But isn't there a risk there? What about important details, context, especially in, say, business?
That's a fair question. And they address it with this really useful military concept, commander's intent.
Okay, what's that?
So instead of a super detailed 50-page plan that can fall apart the minute something changes,
Which it always does.
right, the commander's intent is a plain talk station of the goal. What's the single most important thing we need to achieve? It's clear, concise, and allows people down the line to make their own decisions and improvise, but still stay aligned with the main goal.
Ah, I see. So it guides action without dictating every step, like Southwest Airlines.
Perfect example. Their core identity, their commander's intent, was basically, we are the low-fare airline. Simple.
And everything flowed from that.
Everything. No meals, that costs money, raises fares, no seat assignments. More complex, lower turnaround, raises fares. Only one type of plane. Simply maintenance, training, keeps fares low. That simple core filters every decision.
Okay, so first, find the simple core. Got it. What's next? We have the core, but people need to notice it.
Exactly. Which brings us to you for unexpected. You got to violate expectations.
Break the pattern, basically. Surprise people.
Yep. Our brains are wired to ignore the predictable, the normal. It's efficient. So to grab attention, you need to do something surprising. Break someone's mental schema.
But just getting attention isn't enough, right?
Yeah.
You need to keep it.
True. And that's where their gap theory of curiosity comes in. Curiosity, they argue, happens when we feel a gap in our knowledge, something we know and something we want to know.
Okay. Like a mystery.
Exactly, like a
Yeah.
mystery. So to keep people engaged, you don't just present the surprising fact and then explain it away immediately. You need to open up more knowledge gaps, tease them along.
Make them want the answer.
Right. They tell this great story about a journalism professor, Nora Ephron.
Oh.
She gave her students this boring press release about a faculty meeting, asked them to write the lead paragraph. They all came back with something dull like, the faculty met on Tuesdays.
Standard stuff.
Totally standard. Ephron then showed them the real lead, there will be no school on Thursday.
Whoa, that definitely creates a gap. Why? What happened?
Exactly. Instant curiosity, unexpected. It breaks a pattern and makes you need to know more. That's the power of the unexpected.
Okay, so simple core, make it unexpected. Now, how do we make it memorable? Make it stick in the brain.
That leads us to the first C, concrete. Make it tangible.
This feels related to the curse of knowledge again. Experts like abstract terms.
They do. Abstraction is the luxury of the expert, as they say. But our brains aren't built for abstraction. We remember stuff we can picture, stuff that relates to our senses.
Things we can see, hear, touch.
Yes, they call it memory as Velcro. Concrete ideas have more hooks for our memory to grab onto. Abstract ideas are smooth, slippery, they don't stick.
And the classic example they use for this is the movie Popcorn.
Oh, the popcorn campaign by the Center for Science and the Public Interest. It's brilliant. They wanted to warn people about the insane amount of saturated fat in movie popcorn.
But just saying 37 grams of saturated fat, that's abstract, right? Nobody really knows what that means.
Exactly. It's a number. It doesn't land. So CSPI made it concrete, viscerally concrete.
Oh.
They said that a medium buttered popcorn at a typical theater contained more artery clogging fat than, do you wait for it, a bacon and eggs breakfast, a Big Mac and fries for lunch, and a steak dinner with all the trimmings combined.
Oh my God, that's a lot of food.
Right. You instantly picture that pile of greasy food. Nobody remembers 37 grams, but everyone remembers the image of eating a whole day's worth of junk food in one go.
That definitely stuck. And it changed things, didn't it? Theaters started offering healthier options.
It did, because it was concrete. People understood the threat in a way numbers couldn't convey.
Okay, concrete. Makes sense. That leads us to the second C. Credible. People have to believe it.
Yep. Simple, unexpected, concrete. But if it sounds unbelievable, it won't stick either.
So, how do we build credibility? Obviously, you can cite experts' authority.
Sure, external credibility, scientists' reports, etc. But the book highlights something really interesting, the power of the anti-authority.
Anti-authority, like who?
Think about those anti-smoking ads. You could have a doctor explaining the risks.
Okay, that's the authority.
Right. Or you could have a lifelong smoker, maybe someone actually dying from lung cancer, talking about their regrets. That person has zero official credentials, but their firsthand experience, their raw honesty, that has incredible credibility, often more than the expert.
Yeah. That lived experience feels very real.
It does. And for businesses or individuals trying to establish credibility, they talk about the Sinatra test.
The Sinatra test.
Mm.
Like Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, from his song, New York, New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. The idea is you don't need a long list of credentials or minor successes.
Okay.
You need one really impressive, undeniable example that proves your capability for everything else. If a catering company can say, we catered the White House state dinner,
then they can probably handle my office party.
Exactly. That one example answers all the questions. It passes the Sinatra test. Case closed. And notice that example is also concrete.
Ah, good point. It connects back. And they say statistics need this too.
Yeah, stats can numb people.
Yeah.
To make them credible, you often need to translate them into something more human scale, more relatable. Find the one data point that illustrates the bigger principle.
Okay. Credible? Now, we believe it,
mm.
But do we care? That must be E for emotional.
I got it. Making people care. Because knowing something is true isn't always enough to make us act, is it?
Not usually, no. We need to feel something.
Exactly. Emotion drives action. Logic might steer, but emotion is the engine. And the key insight here is the power of one.
The power of one.
Our empathy, our ability to feel for others, it's wired for individuals, not for huge abstract numbers.
Like knowing statistics about poverty versus seeing one child's face.
Precisely. They talk about the Save the Children campaign. When they showed potential donor statistics about millions of starving children in Africa, donations were okay.
Right.
But when they focused the appeal on one specific little girl, Rokia from Mali, showed her picture, told her story, donation shot way up. It connects to that famous Mother Teresa quote they mention. If I look at the mass, I will never act. If I look at the one, I will. We connect emotionally to the individual.
That's powerful. And they also talk about appealing to identity.
Yes. Making people feel like acting or not acting is tied to who they are. The classic example is the Don't Mess with Texas anti-littering campaign.
I remember that. It was huge.
And it worked incredibly well, not by talking about environmentalism or fines.
No.
No, it worked by tapping into Texan pride. Littering wasn't just wrong. It was something a true Texan wouldn't do. It was an affront to their identity. That emotional connection made people change their behavior.
Okay, so we've got simple, unexpected, concrete, credible, emotional. What's the final S?
The final S is stories, putting it all together through narrative.
And stories aren't just like window dressing. They're functional.
Absolutely functional. They call stories mental flight simulators.
Flight simulators. How so?
When you hear a compelling story, your brain doesn't just passively listen. It activates the same areas as if you were actually experiencing those events. You run through the scenarios, the decisions, the emotions.
So it's like practicing in your head.
Exactly. A story doesn't just tell you something. It provides knowledge and a kind of script for how to act when you face a similar challenge or situation.
Like hearing the story of Jared from Subway losing all that weight.
Perfect example. That wasn't just data about calories. It was a story, a challenge plot story that gave millions of people a mental script. Maybe I could do that too.
Ah, and they identify different types of plots?
Yeah, three main ones that are really powerful. The challenge plot, like Jared overcoming big obstacles, inspires us to act.
Okay.
The connection plot stories about people bridging gaps, like racial divides or social differences, these inspire us to connect, to be more tolerant.
Right.
And the creativity plot, think the Archimedes Eureka moment. Stories about people having mental breakthroughs, solving problems in ingenious ways. These inspire innovation. Stories engage us on multiple levels.
Wow, okay. 6SS. Simple, unexpected, concrete, credible, emotional stories. That's the framework.
That's the core toolkit.
So if we step back a bit, look at the big picture of the book, what are the main recurring themes or messages that really jumped out?
Well, for me, theme one has to be the curse of knowledge itself. It's the foundation for everything else.
It's the problem the whole framework is trying to solve.
Exactly. If you don't recognize that your own expertise is making you unclear, none of the other tactics will really work effectively. You have to overcome that first.
Yeah, that self-awareness piece is huge.
Yeah.
For me, a big one is theme two. Simplicity means ruthless prioritization.
Saying no to good ideas to focus on the great ones.
So hard. We always want to add more information, more points, thinking that makes it clearer or more comprehensive. But the book really hammers home that less is more. The real challenge is exclusion. What do you leave out?
Yeah, asking yourself, what is the single most important thing? And sticking to it.
It's a discipline.
Definitely. Then theme three, I'd say, is emotion trumps logic for action.
We think we're rational.
We like to think so. But when it comes to actually doing something, changing behavior, making a commitment, feeling drives the bus. Understanding isn't enough. You need to make people feel something.
It makes you think, doesn't it? That's the last time you really changed your mind or took a big step. Was it a statistic or was it a story, an emotional pull?
Usually the latter, right?
Wait,
That connects to theme four. Human scale communication beats abstract data.
bringing it back to the concrete.
Always. Translate the numbers, the jargon, the strategies into things people can picture, relate to, grasp intuitively. Give them the movie popcorn equivalent. Don't just give them the grams of fat.
That's such a sticky takeaway in itself.
It really is. And the book itself is full of lines like that, phrases that really distill the ideas memorably.
Yeah, the quotes themselves are kind of made to stick, aren't they?
They really are. We should probably share a few key ones.
Good idea. What's the first one that comes to mind?
Got to start with the diagnosis. The most basic reason that we struggle to communicate is the curse of knowledge. Just pins the core problem perfectly.
Yeah, keeps it front and center.
Yeah.
And I love the one about stories. A story is a flight simulator for the brain. Hearing a story is like a dry run for the real world.
It really elevates storytelling, doesn't it? From nice to have to essential tool.
Absolutely. What else?
The Mother Teresa quote, driving home the emotional piece, "If I look at the mass, I will never act. If I look at the one, I will." The power of focusing on the individual.
So important. And maybe one more, that reminder for all us experts.
Right. Abstraction is the luxury of the expert. A punchy reminder to keep it concrete for your audience.
Okay, so we have the framework, the themes, the quotes. Let's make it super practical. How can people listening apply this stuff like tomorrow?
Okay, well, if you're a leader rolling out a new strategy, ditch the 50-slide deck, or at least start with simple. Find your commander's intent. What's the one sentence that captures the core goal clearly enough that everyone can use it to guide their own actions?
Empowering people while keeping them aligned. Nice. What about, say, a job interview? Or maybe just trying to persuade someone one-on-one?
Definitely use the Sinatra test for credibility. Don't just list skills or past jobs. Give them one concrete, powerful success story that proves your capability. I single-handedly managed X project, resulting in Y tangible outcome. Make it specific, undeniable.
Let that one strong example do the heavy lifting. I like it.
And if you teach, train, or present information regularly, start with unexpected. Hook them with a mystery, a surprising stat, a puzzle. Create that knowledge gap first.
Get their curiosity going.
Exactly. Then use concrete analogies and stories to fill the gap and make the learning stick. Don't just lecture, engage their curiosity and senses.
These are really actionable tips. Thinking about the whole book, what was the most maybe surprising or inspiring thing for you?
For me, it was the feeling of agency it gives you, the idea that making an idea stick isn't some mystical art based on charisma.
Yeah, you don't have to be a natural.
Right. It's a design problem, it's solvable. There's a checklist, a process you can follow that's incredibly empowering for anyone who needs to communicate effectively, which is pretty much everyone.
I totally agree with that. It feels less daunting. For me, the most valuable bit is probably just constantly remembering the curse of knowledge.
Keeping yourself in check.
Yeah, just recognizing it in myself.
Yeah.
Asking, okay, am I assuming knowledge here? Am I using jargon? Could I make this more concrete? That awareness alone is probably the biggest step to communicating better.
It really is. It's the starting point. And maybe a final thought to leave people with. It's kind of an ethical one.
Oh.
Well, if this framework gives you the power to make any idea sticky, good ideas, bad ideas, true ideas, false ideas.
Yeah. The tools work regardless of the content.
Exactly. So the provocative thought is, now that you have these tools, what's your responsibility? How do you consciously ensure that the ideas you choose to make sticky are the ones that are actually worthwhile? The ones that are good, true, and genuinely deserve to survive and spread?
That's a really important point to consider, using the power responsibly.
Something to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.